Welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show. I'm David Gardner, broadcasting from Fool Global Headquarters here in Alexandria, Virginia. We're here each week to talk money in all of its motley forms. I hope you're in the midst of a beautiful weekend. On this week's show, we'll talk trust funds for pets. Yes, we're actually quite serious about that. Plus, our game, Which is Bigger, and your phone calls. But we begin this week's show by asking a question. Is there a bubble in the housing market? And if so, what can you do about it? And here to talk about that is Fool Radio Economics contributor Charlie Whelan, the author of Naked Economics, Undressing the Dismal Science. He joins us from the NPR Bureau in Chicago, Illinois. Charlie, welcome back to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Good to be with you.
Charlie, Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan recent as last Friday, in fact, said the nation's housing market showed signs of, quote, froth, end quote. He went on to say that he didn't think there was a nationwide housing bubble, but that some local markets may be experiencing one. Charlie, what is the Economist's definition of a bubble, of froth?
Well, froth is really a polite way of saying there's a bubble going on. You don't want the Fed chairman using the B word, or it could pop that very bubble if indeed there is one. But basically, economists say there's a bubble when there is some unsustainable increase in prices and where those prices have become untethered from whatever the underlying asset is. So if you think back to the last big bubble, which was the internet stock bubble, people were paying exorbitant prices for stocks for companies that had no earnings. They were losing money, and people were paying high multiples, not even multiples, because you need profits for multiples, but they're paying extraordinary amounts of cash for stocks in companies that aren't making money. In the case of real estate, what you'd see in a bubble market is where people are buying property not because they want to rent it out, or even in cases where they want to live there, but because they think they can hold it for a little while and sell it to someone else for more. So they're basically, it's the greater fool theory. I'm going to buy it, I'm going to make money by flipping it over, not by using it, renting it, or otherwise making use of its intrinsic value.
Mm. Charlie Whelan, author of Naked Economics. Let's look at the naked economics of how markets crash. If there was a bubble in the housing market, could the housing market crash the way the stock market did, or are we talking two entirely different animals?
No, there's unequivocal evidence that it could crash in much the same way, and we know that because we've seen it happen elsewhere. Folks remember the Japanese stock market crash, but for some reason, fewer people seem to be mentioning the property crash that came there shortly thereafter. So around about 1990, shortly after the stock market crash, Japanese property prices fell 60%. From peak to trough, an enormous connection. And in fact, there was a little tail that subsequently hit the U.S., and I remember reporting on it for The Economist. I was writing about the Hawaiian economy, and because there was so much Japanese investment money in the Hawaiian property market when the Japanese market corrected, actually more than a correction, that was a crash, the Hawaiian market also corrected. And I actually have friends who declared personal bankruptcy because they had been transferred to Hawaii, bought a house near the peak, were not excessively leveraged, but like any mortgage, they'd put a small percentage down. And then when the market crashed in Hawaii, as kind of the aftershock of the Japanese crash, they lost all the equity in their house, and that was a substantial portion of their net worth, and they ended up having to declare personal bankruptcy. So we've seen it in Japan. In Britain, there was a 25% correction in the housing market in the late 80s, early 90s. So clearly we know from looking around the world that property prices, like stocks, if they become inflated, will correct, and it could be a very, very serious correction on the scale of what we've seen with stock prices.
Mm. And yet, Charlie, I have this idea in my head that a lot of us are willing to sell something at a loss more easily if it's a stock, let's say. It feels like, oh, darn it, I was wrong. Okay, fine, I give up. We cash out the stock. It feels to me anyway, intuitively, as if many fewer people would be willing to do that with their property. So my question is, were housing prices to decline, does that really slow down all transaction in the real estate market?
Houses tend to stay on the market longer for exactly the reason that you mentioned. In the case of stocks, it's unlikely that all your stocks are down, so you may still have some winners, and you think of yourself as kind of shedding the losers. In the case of real estate, it's unlikely you've got 10 or 20 houses or condominiums in your portfolio. So people are averse to taking a loss, and if they can stand it, they will often sit on a house that's not moving. I remember this from New England in the late 80s. I was working in Maine at the time. There was a economic correction that then affected the housing market, and housing prices flattened and fell in some cases. And a lot of folks who realized that they were going to perhaps lose money if they sold their house moved away and didn't sell the house or left it on the market for a long time. So you're right that people will sometimes respond by just hanging it out there. But at the end of the day, if there's not a buyer willing to pay your price, you've got to sell it, and you need to get rid of that asset. You're going to have to sell at a loss.
Charlie, we talk a lot about asset classes, not using that phrase in this show, but we think about stocks a lot in this show. We occasionally talk bonds, and we're talking real estate right now. Can you give me a sense for how the housing market has performed as an asset class versus, let's say, the stock market over the years?
Surprisingly, the housing market is not a terrific investment relative to the stock market. Robert Shiller, no stranger to bubbles, the author of Irrational Exuberance, went back to 1880 and looked at housing prices, and he concluded that housing prices had gone up about 0.4% a year in real terms, so adjusted for inflation. Now, there are two important caveats, I think, that we should make. The first is that when you're looking at houses that people live in, the big benefit is you get to actually live there. It means you're not paying rent somewhere else. So capital appreciation, which is what Shiller measured, is really only part of the return on a piece of property. The second piece is that you either live there rent-free, or if you're using it as an investment property, you rent it out and you get that rental stream, which Shiller does not pick up. Mm. The second important piece is that Americans are notoriously bad savers. So even if your house is not the best investment, when economists think about this in highly theoretical terms, they say, all right, well, maybe you shouldn't buy a house, you should rent, and you should take all that extra money that you save and you should put it in stocks and bonds and so on. Well, that last little piece, actually having the discipline to save the money and make alternative investments, is something that we're not terribly good at. So what the housing market has done for America is it has often forced us to save. When you write that check to the mortgage company every month, part of that goes towards the equity in the house. 20 or 30 years later, when you're ready to retire, for the vast majority of Americans, the house is their primary asset. So the forced savings component of it, even if it is not the best possible investment, should not be underestimated.
Mm. Charlie, I want to close by asking you about two different types of people listening to the show right now. The first person I'm going to ask you about is the person who is a homeowner and might even agree with you that real estate looks rich. Is there anything that I can or should do? I mean, I wasn't planning on leaving my house, but gosh, I live in an urban area, and I do have to admit my house is worth twice what it was just 4 years ago. Is there anything I can or should be doing?
I think there are a whole host of things that people can do to respond. And I'm saying that I'm not sure there's a bubble going on, but I would put myself in the Greenspan camp that there are certainly signs that things are a little overheated.
I guess froth is tiny bubbles, right? Isn't that what froth
exactly,
is?
Exactly, exactly. Right. And I like the froth analogy. So I've got kind of a checklist of things that people should do, just assuming that there's a risk of a bubble. You don't even have to be convinced that there is one, but just as a natural source of protection, just like you'd buy homeowners insurance or something like that. Mm. You're not convinced your house is going to burn down, but you still have certain wise courses of action. The first is the case you mentioned, which is if you own your home, you're not planning on moving anytime soon, you've seen a rapid run-up in price, my advice would be, you know, basically do nothing, assuming you're not highly indebted. There's no reason for you to respond one way or the other. You're not dependent on that high price. So, you know, by and large, ride it out. Maybe the price will correct, maybe it won't, but it's not going to affect you a whole lot. But a footnote to that, which is for that case or any other, I would admonish you not to borrow heavily based on some expectation that the prices are going to continue to go up as they have in the past, or even at current prices. You know, you pick up the paper and you read that your neighbor's house just sold for $1.2 million, and I wouldn't assume and go out and get some kind of home equity loan based on that $1.2 million price, even if it's kind of fixed in your mind, because if you get heavily indebted and there's a correction, then you create a problem for yourself.
Let's now talk about, as we look down your checklist, Charlie, let's talk about people who are in the market, maybe even to buy their first house.
Well, I think those folks might want to give some consideration to renting rather than buying. And this is heresy as part of the American dream. You know, it's kind of, we've just punctured this ideal of home ownership, which is what we're all supposed to aspire to. But The Economist ran an article about a month ago running through the numbers saying that in many of these markets, particularly the ones that are overheated that the Fed chairman referred to, the numbers don't add up in terms of actually buying the house. You're far better off renting because the rents have stayed relatively low relative to the purchase price of a home, and using the extra cash that you would have tied up in the house to buy alternative investment stocks and bonds and so on. So for those looking to buy, I would be careful of the advice that if you don't rush in now, you'll never be able to afford it, because that's kind of fool's advice. And I would strongly consider renting because the numbers are tilted in that direction right now, at least in some markets.
And of course, Charlie, whenever you say fool's advice on the show, we always hasten to point out you're talking about the small f kind of fool.
Exactly right. Not the capital F fool's advice, which you should usually act upon.
On the Motley
not
Fool
so
Radio
much so
show.
That you can, right, but not so much so that you can find us criminally liable.
Charlie Whelan is the author of Naked Economics, Undressing the Dismal Science. Charlie Whelan, thanks for joining us once again, and enjoy your weekend.
Great to be with you.